You're listening to Everything We Almost Said, A Story of First Love, written by Claire Ruiz and read aloud by Kate Hayes. Recording 2025. The book begins. Chapter 1. The Blank Page. The charcoal stick snapped in my hand, a dry, brittle sound that seemed to echo too loudly against the silence of the empty stage. I froze, my breath catching in my throat, half expecting the boards beneath my sneakers to groan or the dust motes dancing in the late afternoon sun to stop their lazy drift. But the stage remained still, a skeleton of plywood and black gaffer tape waiting for the flesh of the festival to be stitched onto it. I exhaled, long and slow, blowing the charcoal dust away from my sketchbook. It puffed into the air, a gray cloud that smelled of graphite and old wood. My fingers were stained black up to the second knuckle, a permanent badge of my cowardice. I looked at the drawing. It was accurate, technically. The perspective of the risers was correct. The way the stage lights hung like dormant jellyfish from the rigging was rendered with precise shading, but it was dead. It lacked the hum, the vibration, the terrifying potential energy that usually filled this space before the crowd arrived. Oakhaven was holding its breath. It was late August, that suspended hour between summer's heat and autumn's chill, where the salt air still carried the ghost of sunscreen and sweat, but the evenings had begun to bite. The festival grounds were a maze of yellow caution tape and half-inflated bouncy castles, silent giants waiting for children who wouldn't come until tomorrow. Today was a soundcheck day. Today was the day the town transformed from a sleepy coastal dot into a beacon for the indie music scene, for the tourists, for him. I flipped the page of my sketchbook, the paper rough against my thumb. I needed to draw something real, something that wouldn't betray me. The sound of a car engine cutting through the gravel of the parking lot broke my concentration. It wasn't the rumble of a tour bus, or the aggressive purr of a rental SUV. It was the wheezing, familiar cough of an old Volvo. I didn't want to look. I told myself I wouldn't look. I focused on the grain of the wood beneath the stage lights, trying to memorize the texture, the knots, the flaws. But curiosity is a hook in the flesh, and I knew who it belonged to. The Volvo pulled into the spot closest to the stage, the driver's side door creaking open with a metallic shriek. Then, the passenger door. Two figures emerged. Julian Thorne stepped out first. He was wearing an oversized flannel shirt that had seen better decades. The sleeves rolled up to reveal forearms corded with the tension of someone who played too hard and slept too little. He carried a guitar case that looked heavier than it should have, the leather handle worn smooth by years of grip. Beside him, Silas Vance, no relation, though the town liked to confuse us both, slid out with the grace of a predator. Silas wore a linen shirt that cost more than my monthly rent, unbuttoned just enough to suggest effortlessness. He held the phone, filming Julian, or perhaps filming himself filming Julian. I kept my head down, my charcoal moving instinctively across the page. I drew the curve of Julian's shoulder, the way his head was tilted slightly down, eyes fixed on the ground as if the gravel held the answers to questions he was too afraid to ask. "Look at that posture." Silas's voice drifted over the fence, amplified by the acoustic geometry of the stage pit. "You're carrying the weight of the legacy, Jules. Shoulders back. Head up. The camera loves a hero, not a martyr." Julian didn't answer immediately. He set the case down on the stage with a heavy thud that vibrated through the soles of my feet. I felt it in my teeth. "I'm fine, Silas," Julian said. His voice was lower than I remembered from high school, roughened by coffee and smoke, but it still had that tremor. That subtle crack at the end of every sentence where he held back the truth. "I just need to check the monitor mix. If the bass is too loud, I can't hear the lyrics. If I can't hear the lyrics, I'm just making noise." "Nobody cares about the lyrics, Julian." Silas laughed, a bright, sharp sound that felt like glass breaking. "They care about the vibe. They care about the story. The boy who left Oakhaven to become a god and then came back to be a man. It's compelling. Lean into it." I pressed harder with the charcoal, the line on my page becoming a dark, jagged scar. "They care about the story." That was the lie we all told ourselves in Oakhaven. We pretended that Julian Thorne's return was about music. But I knew, and Mara knew, and even Leo, Julian's older brother, who was standing off to the side leaning against the chain-link fence with a half-eaten apple in his hand, knew that this was about survival. Julian was terrified that if he stopped performing, if he stopped being the golden boy of the Thorne family dynasty, he would cease to exist. And Silas? Silas was terrified of being irrelevant. So they danced, a grotesque waltz of mutual need in front of an empty stage. Leo took a bite of the apple, the crunch audible even from where I crouched. He waved at Julian, a slow,